Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Okay, all right. We are ready. We are ready. I'm Kay Thompson. I hope this is Kay Thompson live. There seems to be a little static on the line. Do you know that we are undergoing some serious rain here in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area? And I hope everybody can hear us clearly. And my name is Kay Thompson, and the show is Kay Thompson Live. We do news, information, education, and global communication issues. And we're great to be on tonight, but there is a story that's breaking wide open. Absolutely hilarious and funny and sad and stupid and all those good things, or all those funny things. Also, let me see if my son, Eric Payne, is on the air right now. Eric, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
It sounds like we're in the rain ourselves. There's a lot of rain in Jersey.
I know,
wow.
We need a boat or something.
Sounds like we're in the rain ourselves, so hopefully we can get a better connection. And maybe the static will clear up a little bit. Maybe it's just in the phone lines as we're calling in.
That's right.
Outside of the studio, from outside the studio.
Well, Eric, what do you think about this dopey story with this Donald Sterling or Sperling? You know, banned for life from the NBA, from the Clippers, you know? What is your opinion on this?
Yeah, I think that it's a good thing that Donald Sterling is banned. He's had a reputation for being a racist for a while. Mm-hmm. Just now coming to the forefront, people that live in L.A. know that I knew that of him. I actually used to go to Clippers games when they were bad. My friend Kadeem Hardison and Daryl Bell have courtside seats, bought courtside seats to the Clippers a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
When they first started on the TV show A Different World, and obviously coming into some money, so they bought some season tickets. And obviously the best thing you could do is buy season tickets to a team that's not that good, especially to get a decent price. And they did that courtside seats at the Clippers. So I went to a lot of the Clippers games, met Donald Sterling, because, of course, he would always come over and shake Kadeem's hand, obviously, as he did to all the high-profile people. But I had heard that was the rap on him, that, you know, the buildings, I had heard about the buildings he owns, not wanting to rent spaces to black and brown people, and he actively pursued that. So if he said those things, I haven't heard any of the tapes, I just heard what he alleged to have say. But, you know, if he said those things, then he should be gone. He certainly should,
Yeah, well,
know.
They said he really said them. In fact, they've been all over the air, you know, on the different shows and whatnot. What he is, you know, when I first started hearing the story, I said, this is a modern-day slave owner. That's exactly what he is. You know, and then I'm sorry?
Yeah, he has that mentality. But I like to put my own spin on that. A lot of people are talking about he was talking like a slave owner and, you know, he's talking to us like we're slaves, and he pays and he puts food on the table and this and that. Here's the thing. When a white dude is hired to be CEO of a major Fortune 500 company, or he's hired to be a high-level executive, the guys who hired him, they don't refer to him as a slave. They don't say that I put food on the CEO's table, I put his kids through college, I did this, I did that. No, they say that they hired a very talented individual, and they pay them for their services. So Donald Sterling doesn't put food on the table of his players. He doesn't buy them cars. He does none of that. He pays them for a service, a very particular service that clearly no one that Donald Sterling knows, no one that he's related to, knowing that he hangs out with can do that job. So he had to hire these very talented young black men to do that job. So he's not, they're not his slaves. They're some very highly trained individuals who get paid very well for him. If he wants to hire them to perform those services for them, then he pays them handsomely. Then what they do with their money and take care of their families and provide for themselves is what any person does. But this whole thing about people saying, well, he puts food on the table, that's a slave mentality, people don't refer that way when you talk about a white person hired for a job at a high-level executive position. Nobody refers to them and says, I put food on their table. They just say they're very talented. I got a very talented person or executive to run my company. So I want to put an end to that whole kind of, just because he thinks that way, clearly he's hiring gentlemen who are very skilled and good at what they do, and he pays them dearly for what they do. They're not slaves.
We're not referring to them, or I'm not referring to them as slaves, but he's acting like that. You know,
no, but that was...
Especially with the way that he talks about them and talks about them on that tape that was played. So I would say that, you know, that's exactly what he reminds me of. Okay?
Right.
And I'm quite sure that, you know, for him to say the kind of things that he says on tape or you know, or out in the open, the point is it was now out there in the open. If that's the way he feels about his players, he's the people that he has bought, really. Okay, sure, he pays them for it. He better pay them for it. One thing I am proud about is the way the Clippers responded to him. Okay.
Right. He pays them for a service. They're not bought for him. The fact that he thinks that way is his warped mind that thinks that way, and his warped generation of individuals who think like he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's on them. And people talk about this is a conversation in private or whatever. You can say whatever you want in private, but once it gets out there and people know how you really feel, then they're going to respond accordingly. Now,
exactly.
I don't think you can force him to sell his team or take his team away, but apparently there is that is in the constitution of the NBA that if what he does is bad for business as a whole for the NBA. If what he does is bad for business in the whole for the NBA, then they can force him to give up his team. But I just think that the way you hit him, really, he's still going to make money. The way people should respond is don't go to the games, don't buy the tickets, don't buy none of their merchandise, don't watch the Clippers. That's when Donald Sterling will have to sell the Clippers. When the Clippers cease to make money, that's when we'll have to sell them. All this, let's boycott, whatever, all that stuff it doesn't really help anybody. If you really want to hit a business person, someone who all they care about is money, if you really want to hit them where it hurts, hit them in their pocket.
That's
how to do that. This old one,
you know,
take his... Go ahead, Mom.
Yeah. One of the people who was interested in buying that, I understand, according to the media, is Oprah Winfrey. And also, who else I was... what's his name? The young fighter.
Floyd Mayweather. I mean, these are all
Floyd
people they've
Mayweather.
Mentioned. These are all people they've mentioned. Nobody knows really how serious they are, but I don't, you know, those, who knows? I mean, I think the best thing that would be, someone mentioned this on MSNBC yesterday, would be to do what they do with the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers are owned by residents of Green Bay. Everybody has a share in the team. And so so everybody, you know, that's why the Green Bay Packers have such a long and storied support fan base, because the fans, all our business, own shares in the team. So it really is about the fans and the people from the area, as opposed to some big wealthy guy just trying to make a buck who doesn't really care about the sport and care about the athletics. So I think that they should do that with the Clippers. I think they should allow the fans of Los Angeles to buy shares into the Clipper organization and allow the people to own it. That would be the best way to really hurt Donald Sterling. And really, if they were going to be a people's team, if you really want to open it up, that's what you do. So,
that,
you know,
I
but
like.
Who knows
that
if they're
going to
really do that. Yeah.
I want to tell people also that you know, we're going to be opening up the phones just as soon as we get to Gina Scott is going to be calling in. Gina Payne Scott is going to be calling in, as in Wayne Gilman. Wayne has had illness in the family, so you know he's been dealing with that for a while, and so they are probably going to be calling in too. Gina Scott is calling in, and also Wayne Gilman. Yes.
Oh, we have Wayne Gilman there. Hello, Wayne.
I'm on the line now. I just want to say hello to everybody and. You and Eric again, and thank you for your support. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, and I just been listening into a little bit of the conversation. I tell you, I don't know what punishment would be fitting for Don Sterling at this point. You know, it's just sad that we have to go through this in 2014.
He could disappear.
At a time. Well, that's true too.
You know, You know.
Yeah, it would be great if that could happen, but we know in reality, I mean, he's going to be around for a while. His family certainly don't want to lose their interest in it, but you know, and again, I get annoyed when I hear some members of the media ask questions about the whole thing about the privacy issue. You know, I think we've all been in situations. At least I'll speak for myself. Where I've said something privately to a girlfriend or a friend, and then somehow it's repeated somewhere else. You know, I'm not at a point where people have taken tapes or put, you know, nude photographs on the internet and stuff like that. But you know, it's just sad that this is going on now. And I think what Eric said was a very salient position to take. With regard to just hitting it where it hurts, because I can't see people like Oprah Winfrey, including the people of Los Angeles, the fans of Los Angeles, even engaging in any kind of business-like activity to take over the Clippers without the value of that company going down. He bought it for like $12 million. It's valued at like maybe $700 million now. You know, it's just. And I think the other thing too that we have to look at. Emotionally, the players at this point, they're looking, they want to have that brass ring, that NBA championship ring.
Yeah,
Okay, with this behind them now, I don't know if the incentive is still there because, you know, I wouldn't even want to be affiliated with that person, you know, the man who's paying me, regardless of how much he's paying me. The fact
that's
that
why they're trying to get rid of
that, him. You know, but that's it. You know, it's like it's catch 22. It's damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, but
yeah, Eric, are you still there?
Well, the reality, I mean, you said a couple of things that that are interesting to me, but let me just backtrack from that. The reality is that you know, there are going to be some cats. You know, it's a bar, like anything else in life. People need to make money. It's why people cross picket lines. People need to make money and feed their families. So even though they might sympathize with the picketers and hope to join that union one day, their immediate needs of survival trump that. And when you need to get paid, it's going to trump that. And so if there's cats out there when he's still owning the team, I mean, if he doesn't sell the team, if there's cats out there that need that money, they're going to come to the Clippers. But hopefully, I mean, that's why I said you have to hit them where it hurts. You have to drive the value of the team down. So he wants to sell it because one thing a capitalist, only thing that they understand is money.
Money.
So you hit them there. And if the flip side of that, too, is that some of the players, you know, it might be that thing where I'm going to do this for a second and work for this devil, this evil person. I'm going to call him what he is. He's a devil
to
me.
Right.
And that's my personal opinion, not anybody else's. But, you know, I got to call them what they are. So. So he says, I'm going to work. So the young boys say, I'm going to work for this cat for a minute, make my money, and jump off. I'm going to pimp him like he's pimping me. And I'm not mad at that. So that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, he's been banned for life already. You know? So,
so but he's going to fight
that. He can still own the team. It doesn't make a difference. He's not going to fight. He can't fight the banning of life. That's already been determined.
Yeah.
Only what he can fight, what he is going to fight, is the. Is obviously being forced to sell his team, and from what the Constitution, NBA says, that 3/4 of the owners must do that. But also, too, the flip side is that if the owners don't make him sell, how will that make the rank and file of the NBA feel? They'll make them feel like, I heard somebody say, and I could see that, like they side with a racist point of view. So therefore,
yeah.
It might create ramifications within the rest of the league. And, you know, who knows? You could maybe you end up one day with kind of that whole scab situation where the players, you know, the best players ain't going to play no more to boycott a scenario. And maybe they have scab players come in. I don't know. That's, like, way further down the line.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you bring that up because, I mean, that doesn't sound like as if it's too far from reality, you know, when that level of emotion out there, you know, because the thing, and I tell you, as you mentioned that, you know, it bothers me that the NAACP and all these other folk out here now, voicing their comments. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what is wrong with us. I mean,
the NAACP what?
Well, the thing is that, you know, they made a colossal error in judgment in wanting to even award this guy, but there was so much
and they knew about all this stuff.
Look,
I understand
before you guys get off of that, you got to understand it's the Los Angeles chapter of the NAACP.
No, I understand that, but I'm just
saying. So they do some really wacky Hollywood kiss butt type stuff, if I can say that myself.
Just to make
what it seems like to me.
Wait a minute. We are going to be going for a break very shortly. It's at 8:15. We're waiting to hear from Gina Payne Scott also on this. Now, she's in Bermuda. We want to get the idea of what's going on there. So if we're going to go for a break right now, just let us know.
If you have a product or service, a challenge
here we go,
or
break
something
time.
Important to say, now's your chance to have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out, a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We'll help you to grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 today or visit www.goproradio.com. And you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own show on the fastest-growing network in the galaxy, GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we are back, everyone. We are back. Yes, listen to the voices in your head. If you want to do a show on GoPro Radio, all you have to do is go to GoProRadio.com and then voice your opinion. We are back. Kay Thompson Live. I'm Kay Thompson, and Eric Payne is on the line. Wayne Gilman is on the line. Hopefully Gina Payne Scott is on the line also. So let's finish. Let's go into the not finish, but let's continue with this. This is very interesting. You know, I don't know what's going to be happening, but it is the hottest story. I was listening to MSNBC, and, you know, some really hot things are going on there at MSNBC. They have a lot of dynamite women on there, and I was listening to a few of them, including the Reverend Al. And so we're covering this story, and we're all very concerned about what's going to be going on and what should be going on in basketball. So let's continue.
Okay.
Well, Eric,
I wanted to address what also the privacy issue. Here's the thing about the privacy issue. People can say whatever they want to say, but once they find out you've got a jacked up opinion, it's out. What's the problem? They want to make an issue. They always, and I don't want to, let me not sound racist, but the larger, and I'm not going to say but because I'm not about to sound racist, but the larger dominant population, what has traditionally been the majority population of Caucasians, white people, and we know, obviously, we have white people who are reasonable people and people who are good-minded people and things like that, and that are righteous people, and the righteous of all races are going to win out. That being said, now, you have certain individuals that seem to always, They always want to maintain some semblance of rightness. And also within that, you can tell how latent their racism is.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they want this white man to be able to say what he wants to say, talk badly about the people, and then the people respond and then reject him then based on what they really know, then there's people who say, well, how can they get mad at him for knowing what he thinks in private? They try to find issue with the fact that, wow, you can't even say something in privacy and it gets out. That's not the issue. The issue is that your boys are racist and he got found out. So just stop trying to use the privacy issue like some smokescreen like y'all always do. Except the fact, and the ones that don't do it, the ones that point to a privacy, well, isn't what people say, is it protected no more? Sure, it's protected, man, but why are you trying to protect the fact that he has his right to say his racist shit? Sure, he's got a right to say it. But
mm-hmm.
If you're going to be so bold as to want to stay behind doors, let everybody know what you think then.
Mm-hmm.
Let everybody know what you think. Have the the men say, pull your pants up, get a good hold on yourself. Polite. Get a good hold on yourself and say what you really mean. Don't be cowards. If you're going to be racist, then speak it loud and clear, because I don't know about everybody else, but I like my racists right out front where I can see them.
Exactly.
If they're not going to be, if they're not going to have the courage to do what the skinheads and the Klans people do, at least they let you know where they stand, right?
These people want to talk.
They want to talk both ways, and then got the nerve to get mad at you for reacting to what they said. They're crazy. They're sick. They've got a deep sickness in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very well said. I agree. I just think it's sad that it's life, but this is the world we live in today, you know? And no matter how many times we say these things and complain, it just goes on and on, and then it's reached the point now where something has to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a little feedback. We're not talking at the same time. We've actually got a little reverb, and it sounds like it was fixed there, so. But go ahead, Wayne. Repeat what you just said.
I was just saying that it's sad that it comes to this, you know. But the bottom line is that this guy has been out there and has been somewhat dysfunctional in the business world for quite some time. His success is just by accident, you know. I mean, there's so many people like him, even in the New York area. I'm not saying of the same political persuasion and of the same mindset. But there are many people who have been successful in one arena and have decided to get into another and thinking that they can champion certain beliefs, you know, just by exercising their wealth and all that business. I think, he should have been on the radar screen from the time Elgin Baylor filed the lawsuit against him.
From the time
Kareem
Abdul, you know, complained about his behavior as a boss, you know?
Exactly.
And the Clippers were no good.
Nobody paid any attention.
Exactly. And that's why I go back to the NAACP. And to be honest with you, I mean, I don't want to shift the conversation, but I think something's got to be said about people who look like us, who get involved with people outside our community for monetary reasons. And then when the propitious moment comes to bail out, you know, they perform their function and they're gone.
Wayne, like you said, that takes it in a whole nother direction, bro. We could talk about a whole lot of us that do that. Particularly the Hollywood branch of the NAACP, they do some kooky stuff. The Los Angeles branch, they do some kooky stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, because it's not like this wasn't known about this cat already.
And these guys
turn around and give this guy some sort of achievement award.
Yeah.
That's clearly just somebody in the branch trying to snuggle up against him, because if you really represent black people, you wouldn't do that. You really represent all people of color. You wouldn't award a racist. You wouldn't give him nothing. It's like Malcolm X said, and maybe they were giving it to him because he had one good year. But Malcolm X said, if you got a knife in somebody in my back and you pull it out, in a 7-inch knife in my back and you pull it out 2 inches, is that progress? That's not really progress.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, for all these handkerchief head Negroes and everybody else that want to, it's like you said, they want to rejoice.
Here, Eric.
And they want to celebrate Wayne being accepted by these people. And they want, like Clarence Thomas and Tim Scott and Alan West and Dr. Ben Carson, what they want to do is revel so much in being accepted from these other people that they reject their own and then want to pull the rope up. And I understand sometimes it's hard being black in America. Sometimes you just don't want to be beat up on and picked on, and you want to identify with the winner. But for me, I've been living like this my whole life, and I'm going to take the hard road. You know, and those guys, they could sell out if they want. But that's what those people do. You identify those individuals. That's what they do.
Yeah, they come back, it comes back to haunt you. I mean, it really does, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And it's unfortunate. You mentioned Ben Carson. That's a whole hour by itself. I'm really disappointed by his behavior lately, you know.
Well, he must have gone crazy. Some of the stuff he said, it sounds like, okay, you're a doctor. Just keep doctoring. Mm-hmm. We don't need you to speak about nothing else, Ben.
Where does that come from? I was so shocked.
Right.
I don't know where it comes from, but let's talk about this issue, because we, like you said, we can get off on that for another time and the basketball issue. I mean,
exactly.
I thought, like you said, and Ma, I think you brought this point up as well, about a lot of the players, they really stood up and made their stand, and it was started kind of by LeBron James, who was like the new phenom and new face of basketball. He came out and made his feelings known, which was a real leadership position. I can't say that had that happened with someone else and in the height of Michael Jordan's heyday when he was playing, I don't know if Mike would have spoken up like that. Mike and he spoke up now that he's retired after the fact. But LeBron, in the middle of his career, at the height of what could be his basketball career, spoke up. So that's something a little bit different. Not casting any aspersions on Mike, because he did come out and say Donald Sterling had to go. But it shows it shows you the awareness of these young cats now that they're a little bit more politically aware than maybe the previous generation. You know, we've already been there. We've been making a lot of crazy money now, and I point to the election of a black president. They're a little bit more serious. You know, they're a little bit more focused, you know, which is a good thing. So.
I agree with you. I mean, the thing is, you can't throw water on Mike, because I think, you know, the circumstances are right. I don't think LeBron had a choice but to speak out, and you could tell that whatever he said was not something that he thought out. I mean, the way he was so cogent and articulate about it, it just flew from his lips. I mean, anybody would
have
been.
That's
what
he felt. It hit him in the gut.
Yeah, you know, and it came from his. You know, I mean, anybody who, even the Clippers who played that night, I even wonder sometimes if that game was thrown. You know, I don't know, Eric, if you had a chance to see the game, but, you know, the fact of the matter
I wouldn't be surprised either. Why not?
Right. You can't
blame him. It doesn't have to be thrown. You're just not going to play as hard.
Yeah, that's it, you know. But, and again, I mean, to even continue, even though, you know, they're saying that they're all one, and Kay, I mean, Doc Rivers used to follow you on the air. At the old WLIB. I mean, it you know, I'm just so
Wait, back up.
Wait a minute.
Share this with
me.
Act like I wasn't there. Share this with me from the beginning. What are you saying now?
Doc used to do that sports show with Larry Hardesty. He was,
Doc was
one of those co-hosts, period. And he used to follow your mom on the air, back in the day when LIB was just beginning that whole 24-hour format, and he was still
that.
A Nick,
He used to listen to talk radio. He used to listen to my mother, Doc Rivers.
How do you know this? You'd be surprised how many people listen to your mother.
How do you know this? Is this something? Well, listen to what I'm trying to get both of you guys, to listen and elaborate on, because all of us in the listening audience weren't there. So let's recap for everybody else. and bring us up to date. How now, how do you know that Doc was listening or said he used to follow Kay
Tell
Thompson?
Wayne was the news director.
The thing is that I don't have any empirical evidence as what he did, you know, day to day. But I mean, the deal is that usually anybody with some good common sense would like to know what's on the air prior to their program being aired.
Right.
And your mother's
right.
show follow what your mother's show preceded the sports show in the afternoon
right.
at
mm-hmm.
certain point.
Oh, so
that's
he
right.
probably also from that perspective he probably ended up. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, to see somebody. Yeah, because you know, Doc just really blossomed. I mean, he was a member of the Knicks. He was a player for the
right.
Knicks. Mm. And he was still on the air with us then. But to see his maturation and growth and the manner in which he handled this whole thing, he didn't want to talk to Don Sterling when this stuff first blew open. And I think he handled it really well. I mean, the fact that, you know, he, you know, obviously you could tell from the tenor of his voice that he was, indignant and insulted by what he had heard, but... You know, he wanted to give it at first the benefit of the doubt that that wasn't his voice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But once he found out what was going on, he still did not want to talk to the man. And
we're going to have to break for a break. But let's talk up until that point.
Yeah, I'm getting
okay.
the double talk now that you were talking about before.
Not necessarily the views or opinions of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc., or its affiliates. These broadcasts are provided on the understanding that they do not constitute professional advice or services. Individuals who speak in these broadcasts express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. GoPro Radio Networks and its affiliates do not necessarily endorse or oppose any particular opinion or conclusion discussed in these broadcasts. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute these broadcasts in any way without the express permission of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. GoPro Radio Networks assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with these broadcasts or for your use of these broadcasts in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Listening.
We're back.
Okay, we are
live
back.
Show, GoPro.
Yes. And also, you know, I'm waiting to hear from Regina Scott calling from the Caribbean to let us know if this story, you know, has any traction there. But until then, you two continue with this. I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this because, you know, I haven't understood basketball for a long period of time, even though I was going to the Meadowlands to see the games. And I finally, you know, understood it and met a few people. Remember meeting Shaquille O'Neal. I think I came up to his waist or something. And a few of the other players. I remember when, I forget his name, who's now the coach out there, you know. Not out there, but the coach of the Nets, is he? Jason. Is Jason
you mean the
coach?
Nets or Jason Kidd, yeah.
Jason Kidd, yeah. I'd like to like Jason. Well, and all the players. And I finally found out what it was about basketball. As a matter of fact, my brother, you know, was the star of the basketball game at Jefferson High School in Elizabeth for years, and then he also played for the military, so Buddy was a good player. Yeah, so we come from a family of basketball players. And so, of
right.
course, Eric, you are a star.
Okay, yeah, we had one player, yeah, but, we got one guy playing basketball. We come from a family of basketball players. But anyway, one is good enough.
We do have a skydiver, you know, in the family, who I'm dying to interview.
Yeah,
I just found this out recently,
okay.
So, you know.
But
skydiver?
Yeah.
Somebody actually jumping out of a plane?
Yes, yes, the only thing that he doesn't do.
That's a story for another time.
Yes,
right?
Okay.
But the only, the only thing that she doesn't do, she doesn't like base flying. And base flying is when you jump off the mountain in one of those suits. But this kid is something else, I'm telling you. Well, that's for another day. But, you know, we have a lot of very interesting stories that we're doing now. We're really cutting, I think we're cutting, you know, a new path with, you know, Kay Thompson Live anyway with this
show. Okay. Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's just this whole thing, I think, with Don Sterling is not going to die anytime soon.
No, no.
And,
it's big.
It's a huge story.
It's a huge story.
Right,
let's face it.
And
well,
I just hope people
gonna...
like Oprah and the others don't pony up their money until, you know, that value of that organization has decreased in some. And it's going to take some time for that to happen, you know, because not everybody's going to be on the same page.
Yeah. I think it would be good for someone of color to own the team. I mean, I don't know whether they need to wait for the value to decrease. But, I mean, they want to pave the true value of the team, you know. Obviously, he's going to try to inflate the value.
Yeah.
Any businessman would wait to see if they are able to, you know, they're in the playoffs. So you might as well wait until they get to the championship, see how far they go before, if you have to sell them. You see, you're obviously going to try to get the highest dollar. And it was a good business move by Donald Sterling, who was a lawyer, successful lawyer in Los Angeles. And was able to buy the San Diego Clippers for $12 million. So, you know, and it was a sports franchise. So that was, I mean, that's a very shrewd business move. I mean, he made the bulk of his money, a lot of his money in real estate. That's where he really became a billionaire.
Yeah.
And he owned, to give you guys a quick detail, he resisted moving to the Staples Center for a long time, taking the Clippers over there.
The racist Sterling?
Donald Sterling,
the owner of the team, one of
resisted,
the owners banned.
Listen, Donald Sterling, the owner of the team, the owner of the Clippers, resisted taking the Clippers to the Staples Center because not only did he own the Clippers, but he also owned the sports arena that they played in. So that's why he would, you know, and of course, you know, if you own the building and your team plays in the building, why are you going to go someplace else? So that was for a long time when, you know, the Staples Center was built and the Forum, you know, everyone went to the Staples Center. There was the Clippers, were at least for the first couple of years, the Clippers were still playing at the sports arena. And that was downtown L.A. also over near the Coliseum. But that's because Donald Sterling also owned that building and, you know, he wanted to keep his costs as low as possible.
Yeah,
so that gives you an idea of who this guy really is. And we were also talking about the Clive and Bundy, the rancher. It's ironic that these two stories have surfaced around the same time. The rancher out in Texas who didn't want to pay the grazing fees,
using
the old back taxes.
Using federal land, I'm not paying for it.
For the last 10 years, just doing it, and obviously they've been letting them slide.
How did he get away with that?
Because that was eight years of a Bush administration, and then the last two of a Clinton administration. So, or maybe a year or two of Obama, one of Clinton. But it clearly makes sense, right? I mean, you know, I mean, well, maybe the last 10. I mean, Barack's been there for a while, so it was just a number of years that in Barack's administration, this guy was getting over and not paying his taxes. But just the fact that come time to pay your taxes, they make it into a big thing, and boom, the next thing you know, this guy starts talking, and what do you know, he's a racist, and all these politicians, and all of these, you know, these thought people, they want to jump out and get his back and talk about this and that, and then he starts talking, and they can't run away from him fast enough.
Wow.
You know?
I missed that story. I got to look that one up. I mean, I've been so focused with...
The Clive and Bundy story is he's a rancher out in Montana, wherever.
Uh-huh.
His cattle were grazing on government lands. You got to pay fees for that. He hadn't paid the fees in something like 10 years. He had back taxes. He owed like $1 million, this guy. And he's got the nerve to act like the federal government is infringing upon his right to graze. And he's being he's getting over on a government subsidy. He's a welfare queen. So then it comes out that this guy, he starts espousing about his views of life, and come to find out he was talking about, he was riding through downtown Las Vegas, the black section, and he started talking about, he wondered if black people were better off as slaves instead of being on government subsidy, where the women would sit out on the porch and the men had nothing to do. At least in slavery they had a job, they had something to do. And so once this comes out, all of the, you know, all of the latent closet racists or the racists who think they're undercover, they had to backtrack from supporting this guy because he blew it up. He blew it up like the government was infringing upon his right, and I'm American, and I'm not going to pay taxes. I don't recognize the federal government. And they were all behind him, Rand Paul, McConnell, all the guys, Hannity, all behind him. Then he starts speaking, and they dig up this old tape, him, this old nutty cracker ranting about craziness. So they all had to back up off him now. But his cause
I'm glad that's out there now, because, I mean, that one, I haven't really been able to keep up with everything.
I'm laughing, but this stuff isn't really funny. It's just stupid. But it's so funny. It is so stupid that you have to laugh at. For instance, what was it, Rand Paul, who went and he wanted to find out about how Obamacare was doing, and he went to a senior citizen center. And he got the surprise of his life because he is anti-Obama. So he was asking the senior citizens, and they said, oh, we love it. And he went to another one, oh, that's the greatest thing since Smith. Oh, and he was so embarrassed.
Good,
He should
good.
Know better. What an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it's sad that it takes that level of stupidity,
before the
light bulb comes on and say, hey,
Did he do any research?
No, not at all.
The issue about the Clive and Bundy guy, getting back to that, is just ironic that these people support this guy. And what I've noticed is that it's a need or a willingness or they want to really take every opportunity. It's almost like they take every opportunity they can to say up yours to black people, yours to the black president. Every opportunity they get, it seems like they take that opportunity to say, just to say, up yours. Let's see how we can stick it to them. Let's make the federal government out to be the bad guys here, and that they're trying to take this rancher's land, and that he and this guy said, I don't recognize the federal government. So you're trying to take this rancher's land, and was it like a standoff? They had U.S. Marshals came there, and this guy had the militia, so he had these racist militias coming in. And it was a little standoff. So this happened early last week, and before the tapes about this guy came out. And then here's the funny thing. This is how you know he's an ignorant redneck, because he said, I didn't say those things they said I said. And then they cut to the tape. And it wasn't an audio tape. It was a videotape. Almost thought I was on the corner for a minute.
Stupid.
It was a videotape of this guy saying, the Negro. Let me tell you another thing about the Negro. So when they begin sentences like that, you know it can never end good.
That's right.
You know?
Some of these people are so stupid that you can't help but laugh at them because it's the strangest thing in the world.
I tell you, it reminds me, Kay and Eric, of a story that I have to tell, and it bothers me I even bring this up because... my poor father is fighting for his life now, and I just hope he comes through. I'm sorry, I don't mean to get emotional.
No, that's okay.
But when I was a kid, I must have been no more than maybe 10 or 12 years of age, and we were going down to Washington, D.C. to visit family. One of our relatives, for the first time, was accepted at Georgetown. I didn't even know what Georgetown University was. It was supposed to be a big thing. You know, you're black. You come from the Caribbean, we're not supposed to be doing things like this. You know, it was in the 1960s, and there were riots going on in D.C. So my dad and he's driving this old 1958 Ford that we had as a child, and we're getting ready to visit this family member, and the riots going on, and I'm hearing on the radio, you know, that the Negroes are doing this. They're burning down the Northwest, and they're burning down the Northeast, and they're doing this and they're doing that on the radio. And I turned to my dad, and I said, boy, who are those Negroes? You know, what are Negroes? So he turns, and he looks to me, and he says,
Where are you from?
Negroes, because I thought it was some family. You know, I thought some family named Negro had been... doing this and doing that.
It's
a joke. Yeah, you know. And he said, "No, we're Negroes."
You just gave me an idea for a completely politically incorrect cartoon called The Negroes, The Family Next Door.
It's just that when you mentioned that, Eric, a moment ago about this guy, I couldn't help but you know, tell that story because it was so funny. I was so stupid. I mean, I was young. I'm not to say I wasn't even aware of racial conflict until you know, we got down there and how serious it was at the time, you know. And just something else, you know.
How many black people are aware of it until white people come out and say, you know, Negro, you know, this, I mean, you know, it gets tired after a while, but they're the ones who let you know that you're black.
Exactly.
And, you know.
Yeah, but I can tell you the experience I had that I was very young, you know, when I was down in Virginia at in my granddaddy's farm, and he owned these houses, you know. He bought one for each of his kids and a lot of kids in his family, you know. And anyway, so this one white family was living on, you know, on his land. And there was a little boy who used to come to play with us when we went down there. His name was Eddie. And one time, he said something about, what are y'all doing down here? I said, what are you doing down here? He said, but you're the nigger. this little son of a so-and-so, here he's on my granddaddy's land, and he's calling me what? And you know how you wanna knock this little kid off his bike?
I know, right. Wow.
I said, what are you, Eddie? He said, I'm a whitey. I never forgot that. And
you
I
said
always,
I'm a what?
He said, I'm a whitey. And I never forgot that. I never forgot the accent.
Wow.
But I always regretted that I didn't knock him off his bike.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
But anyway.
You know.
I
but that's
you,
how
so
life was back then, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was.
It's just a kind of ironic, you know, that these two stories happen to come out at the same time. It's just really interesting, and it's kind of an interesting kind of timing.
And you have to laugh at them because you would get so angry.
Right.
You know, I used to
be
very. Once I got to LIB, Wayne, that's when the anger really set in. Because,
you know,
a lot of the things that were happening, you know, in the New York area, I wasn't even, you know, I was aware of it, but didn't take it seriously. You know, working at WLIB was quite an eye-opener, you know. So even with some of the people who worked at WLIB, you know, you say, wow,
and
I mean, you do
still
what?
People talk about what we did back then, you know. I mean, the thing is that, you know, so much of the station's history is really missing. And, I mean, now it's been sold again, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a whole other piece by itself.
But, you know, one thing, I always thought that being one of the few women on the air after Judy Simmons, and, of course, Diane Thompson, but she didn't last too long there. I thought that I knew that the men did not take me seriously because I was able to get away with so much. Remember when I used to develop all these different segments like Children's Forum and the Police Report?
Right.
You know, and they just let me go for broke. As a result, you know, I got a lot of listeners that the rest of them didn't get.
The thing is, you weren't afraid to at least go forward with that. And I just know that there were so many other, you know, people that just had their own agenda. But I think that was important because, you know, the deal is you can't preach hate all day without, and I'm not saying that was the basis of the format, but, you know, when you, from the time it used to sign on as a daytime station, from the time it ended, I mean, it was like a breath of fresh air. You're coming from a completely different perspective, you know? And even, you know, when I remember we had the opportunity to bring in Denise Richardson, who had worked at WOR a number of years. She was also a host on Good Morning America. And we paired her up with Gary Bird because I just felt, you know, we're not a monolith when it comes to our community. You know, we have certain different points of view. You may say things and think a certain way, and I may think something different, you know, and the deal is that I just think that all voices should be heard, and I think
it was
a man's world over there, and you were a trailblazer to break through that.
Well, they just let me get away with so much stuff. I don't know how, but
it's just unfortunate. I mean, it's not to say that you know, another generation of folk couldn't continue. But, you know, maybe this is what GoPro Radio is filling in that void now, you know.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for people to really listen in and get information. Right.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing so many other, you know, new things and new people on. Plump Payne tends to do a lot of politics, you know, because Donald Payne Jr. is there, and we're intending to keep him there. There's the election going on now, who's running for office in Newark? Eric?
Oh, yeah, I've been seeing ads on the radio.
Yeah, what's the update on this? Choppy's gala was just a couple days ago, so what's the update on the whole political situation? Eric, are you there?
I'm here. You guys can hear me?
Yeah, what's the update on the political situation in Newark with Shavar and also,
running for mayor against each other. I couldn't tell her any updates. I don't know any updates. And all we know is they're running for mayor.
They're both. Who else is running for mayor?
Just two people, Roz Barak and Shavar Jeffries. It's just two people, Roz Barak and Shavar Jeffries.
Yeah, because right. I mean, so. the what's his name? Baraka's opponent's been spending a lot of money on airtime. I've watched him during the 11 o'clock news. I wasn't even aware of the contest going on.
You're talking about Shavar.
Right.
I've seen the ads too.
Mm-hmm. But. It's just one of those things, so I gather, you know, Newark politics will be again under the spotlight, you know.
It's always under the spotlight. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Ever since I've been in Newark.
Right. Yeah,
and I'm not in Newark anymore, but, you know, for years and years, but I always pay attention to the whole political thing in Newark.
Exactly.
Yeah, politics is very, very interesting, very interesting.
We just recently...
Christie's been quiet lately. Anything?
Well, he's better.
Sunday. Sunday. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, on Sunday we just had the annual gala for Congressman Donald Payne Jr. And it was very good. We had a Congresswoman, Marsha Fudge from Ohio. Congresswoman represents Ohio. Represents Ohio. And she gave a very very good speech about, you know, what we need to do and stay vigilant, and how more African Americans need to get involved, because there's seems to be a systematic attempt, a coordinated attempt to do these things that would undermine African Americans and people trying to advance, and also undermine the presidency of President Obama, and with these guys with the Supreme Court, the recent decision of the Supreme Court where they're allowing states, in particular Michigan, they struck down, I think, the affirmative action clause or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then also you have these states that want to basically go back to states' rights pretty much as they try to cut out the right to vote for people. So there's it seems to be a kind of a coordinated, insidious plan that some certain individuals, particularly conservative Republican individuals, have at hand. And she spoke about how we really have to work hard, and that, you know,
be very aware of them, right?
Be very aware and be vigilant, because
Go ahead.
I always like to tell people, be very aware of politics. Be involved with politics. Get involved with knowing who your person is that was running for office. You don't want to give up your right to vote or your right to certain issues that you know should be in place. You know, you don't want to give that up. So politics is what makes our country go around, so you've got to be available. You've got to be aware. You've got to vote and encourage everybody else to vote and find out what the issues are. It's not very hard to find out what the issues are. So if you're very diligent about, you know, being involved in politics, it's very easy. So
I always tell
people, you've got to do that. You've got to do that. And then you don't have somebody some potential slave owner or slave driver or whatnot turning back the clock. It's funny looking as he is. He's wealthy. Good Lord. But anyway, Wayne, yes?
No, I was just going to say, I have to agree with you. I think it's so important that even to a certain extent, we have to hold our elected officials their feet to the fire, because, you know, I can't speak for what goes on entirely in New Jersey, because other than the Christie situation, but here in New York, you know, we have a lot of people who hold office And basically the backbone of any good politician is community service. Anybody who gets in office over and over again is because of what that office does on the home front in terms of helping their constituents. And in the last, is not to personalize my situation again, but, you know, I have been astounded by how little is being done in terms of helping, you know, some of our veterans out here and people trying to get within the system.
Yes.
And, until you are personally affected by what goes on, you really have no idea, you know, how much we're in a vacuum. And I know Michelle Obama has done a lot to bring that, you know, to the fore, you know, after a number of reports, scandalous reports have come out of Walter Reed. But, you know, the deal is there are a whole bunch of us, many of them people of color, who've been affected, have given their lives to this country, and can't get the services that
that's
they're entitled
right.
to.
And that's and that's going on all over. So we really have to, you know, put the veterans, you know, in the forefront, you know,
right.
and deal with that, and if, you know, help
exactly.
them. Whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to those drives that we used to have over there at WLIV? Okay.
Beats me, you know. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it has to be continued. In some way, because, you know, it's so many issues, and I just find some of these people who are holding elective office, you know, they're just here for the window dressing and get on.
It looks like
we're
coming up on a break. We got to sign off, Wayne.
Towards the end
of the show.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne.
And I'm Kay Thompson, and
we have Wayne Gilman with us. Listen to us next week. Thank you for tuning in. Kay Thompson Live.
Poncho Sanchez!